Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. Fionnuala Jones, Linda Coogan and Olivia Fahey join us once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi, guys.
I like the shape of your bottles, Linda, if you don't mind me saying so.
I didn't know what you were going to say. I know, it's a fun one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Little stumpy bottle.
Yeah.
Olivia was saying that you think that you get more out of it when it's that shape.
You do,
you
yes.
don't, though. You don't. It's still the same. I know. So, yeah, there's loads in this bottle.
I know. It is nice that when they kind of put a bit of thought into the bottle shape and that kind of thing. So tell us very briefly what those two wines are.
Yeah, so I'm jealous of everyone going on holidays and I'm going to Donegal. So this is a Greek wine.
We'd like to apologise to all our listeners in Donegal. It's a magnificent part
of
the world.
I know, but people I know are going to Greece and Puglia in Italy, and I'm just a little bit jealous of that.
Okay.
But I mean, when I start going up to Donegal and have beautiful photographs, they'll be jealous of these wines.
Absolutely.
There.
Yes. Okay. So Greece and Italy we will be visiting today. And Twisters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God, you sound enthusiastic. I must admit, I remember seeing the original Twister and I thought it was garbage. I thought it was unmitigated garbage. All that ever happened to it, it was that these tornadoes go around the place and then what's his name, who was ever the star in it, would go, run! As
Phil
if
Paxton.
Like you were going to stand there looking at it. That's what they paid scriptwriters to do.
Mm-hmm.
Rant over, why would you make a second edition of this so many years later?
Because
it's from space.
In typical me fashion, you know, it's stupid fun and it's great. And it has Glenn Powell, who I think the last time I was on, I was reviewing a Glenn Powell film as well. So, you know, maybe I won't just review the film. It'll be just the Glenn Powell review.
Mm. Yeah, but is it your objectifying Glenn Powell? Is that what we're really on about here?
Everybody is, in fairness.
No, you are.
Me right now, yes.
Yes.
But I don't think I'll be the only
one. I think
one.
Everyone's objectifying Glenn Powell, I'm going to be honest. Yeah.
Doesn't he have weird teeth?
They're gorgeous teeth.
He's divine.
And
he's
his
divine.
Family all have like the exact same smile as well. So there was like a group shot of them at one of the premieres.
They're clones.
And yeah, they
maybe.
Are.
Yeah. Okay. That's slightly now. And the much anticipated follow up, My Spy, The Eternal City. I must say, the first one passed me by.
First one,
like the
me
number
by
14
too.
Bus. Yes.
Yeah, so there, again, another film that I didn't ever think would ever get a sequel, My Spy, The Eternal City, is now on Prime Video.
What was
Video.
The first one called?
The first one's called My Spy.
Okay.
And it was about this former...
It needs three more words and no one will...
No one will know anything. Yeah. It doesn't even have the colon to be like, this is like the subtitle. It's just all one sentence actually as well, which I thought was interesting.
Hmm.
But it's a follow-on to the first one, which came out in 2020. And if you missed it, it's about this spy called JJ, who is assigned to spy on this woman and her child, and the child kind of discovers all of the cameras in the house and is like, teach me espionage. And JJ does, even though she's only 8.
Yeah, of course, there's nothing. Yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
No one's ringing Tuzler over that
and
one. But Dave Bautista he's fun. He is good.
He is very good. In fairness, sometimes he's not really given the scripts to work with, but he's proven, I think, in the likes of Blade Runner and even, I'd say, Spectre to a certain extent, and especially Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
He is actually a very good actor. But yeah, in this storyline, it's very much aimed at a family, so I'll get more into it later.
Grant. Now, look, the Emmys have been reported all over the place, but it does throw up the question of, is The Bear a comedy?
Yes, it is. It is.
If
you don't think that, you're not watching carefully enough, right? People are very annoyed because, as you said, Emmy nominations this week, it's up for its second season. I think there's a bit of confusion around that as well. I think people think the nominations are for the most recent season, and it's not, because obviously it's only just out. It's for the second season, 23 nominations, the most in Emmy history for this show, because it had like 10 or 11 the previous year as well, or had 10 wins, rather, I should say, in 2023. And people are very mad because it is occupying a lot of the comedy categories. It's nominated, I think, best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress. And I think the argument is that it's taking up space that would otherwise be occupied
by shows that were funny.
But like, if you look at, but okay, it is, I'm fighting a losing battle here, I feel, but I'm going to mosey on. That series was funny. It had its funny moments. I think it's a comedy dramedy. But if you look at everything else that's nominated, like, it's everyone else that deserves to be nominated is nominated. Like, Only Murders in the Building, Curb Your Enthusiasm, What We Do in the Shadows, Loot is coming up a lot, Hacks, Palm Royale, which should not have gotten any nominations. Why is that even there?
Yeah,
like, Apple
really
TV, Robbing a Living, one of the most bizarre shows I've ever seen, also gotten a second season. Not sure how that happened. I don't know. I just can't really. Like, if you consider the other shows that are nominated in drama, you like The Crown, Fallout, The Gilded Age, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like Three Body Problem, Slow Horses. I don't think The Bear competes in that category either. It's just a funny little, weird little shit. Like, it's not.
It's not ha-ha, though.
I think it is. I think yeah,
love
recent.
The Bear, but it's, you see, if you were to get a team of scientists to break down every single episode and go, which bit is comedy and which bit is and which of it is straightforward drama, I feel you'd come to the conclusion that it's a drama with a bit of comedy thrown in it. Now in this, now I know these nominations are for the second series, but in the third series, like, it's clear, like, no one's playing comedy other than the two fat guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like, you could actually cut out all their scenes and it would make no difference to the plot of The Bear. They're just supplanted in there. You do this kind of ad-libby, which is basically annoying. You just want to go and slap them. They're not even funny.
It's a big critique of the most recent season, and it was something that I did appreciate initially, like the insistence of the facts. That's the family name. I'm not swearing on air. And I won't say anything for anyone who's not caught up on the season three yet, but they are way more prominent in this current season. And as you said, it's a lot of like much longer scenes with them. And I think some of them work, some of them don't. Some people were kind of speculating whether they were kind of shoved in so much and there was so much more of the Fact family as a response to the fact that The Bear is often criticised for not being comedic enough, but yet still sweeping comedy categories. Yeah.
When it was at its most affecting, though, in season two, obviously the standalone, the Christmas Day, like, that's not comedy. That's
there's,
like, you know,
there's comedic, you know, like, elements.
I know, but you're
to
eating,
it though.
You're eating your own jumper. It's so anxious, and a lot of what's great about The Bear is the anxiety it provokes in you and that sense of tension.
Yeah.
None of which I would have thought was comedy. Sorry, I'm very cranky today.
You are
I'm
so you, cranky.
I'm so
you
sorry.
Don't want anyone to
I'm
win
so
any
sorry.
Awards.
I'm perimenopause.
I would have actually said that Fallout is funnier than The Bear.
Actually, yeah. It's
weird. So it's Fallout, weird that they're actually in different categories there for sure. Because like Walton Goggins as the ghoul, like, he is brilliant.
And
in
he
this,
got a nomination.
He did.
We
I
love Walton. Yeah.
But like, he is definitely more of like comedic than serious, I suppose, in that sense, but maybe it's the Cooper Howard performance that got him in for drama.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Fallout is essentially a comedy.
Yeah.
A very black comedy, actually.
Yeah.
The Bear is great, and while some comedic moments, is really a brilliant drama, not a comedy. Best show I've seen in a while, says Jim. The Bear is not funny. The first episode is just a load of shouting. I should turn it down. It's not great. Love The Bear, but it's not a comedy. And somebody else says, Twisters are more effective at spreading COVID than 5G. So you probably didn't know that. Maybe a subplot.
We learn something new every day.
In the Twisters. Have you seen The Bear, Linda?
Only the first few episodes, because I was pretty tense and a bit anxious watching it. So I just thought it wasn't going to bring me joy.
You just need to get to Richie's episode. You just need to like crack through and get to four.
Yeah, it's the second season. Well, but I think it's really the second season.
I get all worked up watching it.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. And I just was like,
I interviewed JP McMahon, the restaurateur, and he said he can't watch it because it's triggering.
It's brilliant in what it's captured. Like, any foodie person has said, like, it's extremely true to life to the point where, it's unbearable for them to watch because it just brings them back to stressy situations.
God, we all need to drink. Okay,
exactly.
Linda, go.
Okay, so I like to make things hard for myself by getting wines that are really hard to pronounce, and the listeners love this, I'm
especially
sure.
Especially after a glass of wine where you feel you can say it.
So this is a Greek wine from Crete. So Santorini would be Santorini, not Santorini, would be where most people expect to find wine and go on holidays usually. So this is from Crete and it is called Lyrakis. Lyrakis is the name of the producer.
Okay.
Assertico is the name of the grape. Be very assertive when you want this. You go in really assertive and say Assertico. Okay. They have their own native grapes and, you know, they're not really grown anywhere else. And it just, this one is really clean. It's really fresh. It has got the citrus notes. For me, again, you have to think of your mezze plate and all the little sunshine delights that you want to have. For me, it has, stick your nose in, what are you getting here? ooh, a bit of white peach,
yeah,
a bit of citrus, yeah, lemon.
Apricot.
Mm. Apricot, ooh, yeah. For me, there is a sale.
We'll podcast the porn version of this review later on.
Started with the shape of things. So the minerality and again, the saline influence from the sea is really evident here. So this is interesting because... I know it's quite technical. 7% of the grapes were actually fermented with the skin on.
Yeah.
Which
is usually like what they do for
red wine or pinks. So basically it's adding a bit more texture to this wine. So it's got layers and complexity. That's why you're getting citrus notes and other layers like the saline note. So for me, food, I mean, I want to sit in the garden having this. It's not really a winter warmer. It's more of a summer sip.
Oh, yeah.
The mezze plate, charcuterie, avocado and prawns and things like that. Just nice, simple food. And this is not, there's no oak, stainless steel. It's just meant to be fresh and really delightful, really. What do you think?
Yeah, oh no, fabulous. Yeah.
So Stockists, there's lots of Stockists, lots of independents, Bagot Street, Blackrock Cellar, Donnybrook Fair, Martin's, McHugh's, Pinto Wines and Wine Online, and it's retailing for about €20. But can I just give a shout out to another wine I had yesterday? It's another Greek wine that was star of a tasting I did, a rosé called Gaia from O'Brien's, and it's €13 at the moment, and it was a cracker.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Well done, Linda. So what movie would you like to do first?
Oh, let's go for Twisters, shall
let's we? Let's go for Twisters.
What do you see?
Okay, already has a nice structure. Moisture levels are just right and lots of cape.
What else are you seeing?
Flow is clean, pulling tons of warm, moist air from the south.
And when that warm air and moisture bust through the cap, it explodes in the atmosphere, creating an anvil. The vertical wind shear begins to rotate the updraft, forming a mesocyclone.
And here's the mystery.
We don't know how a tornado forms. We see the hook on the radar, but...
What are all the invisible factors coming together? Every little detail that
has to be perfect. And it's a mix of what we know and everything we can't understand. It's part science, part religion. Come on, baby. Come on, please.
There it is.
Yeah, baby!
There we go. See that? That's a tornado right there, baby. Get some photos of that, man.
The birth of a tornado, nature's masterpiece.
God, the start of that sounded like Linda doing a wine review, actually, I thought, with all the moisture and it explodes up and all that stuff. That was Twisters. Segment of that seemed very, here's the bit you have to read, the science bit, to explain it to people, which sounded a wee bit unconvincing coming from whoever that was.
So I was actually kind of confused myself because, like, I know what scene that's from, but the way that it's done actually in the film is that it intercuts between the two cars. So both Kate, who's played by Daisy Edgar-Jones, and Tyler, who's played by Glenn Powell, they're both explaining the exact same concept at the same time, clearly in each car, but they've intercut it between the two of them.
Right,
so it actually works much better when you see it on the screen as opposed to just the audio.
But, okay, fair enough.
So, essentially, like, this is a film about tornado chasing. So the brief synopsis I'm going to give you is tornado, 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 the end. That is literally all you need to know.
You surprise me.
If you want more detail, Kate has kind of returned to the Storm Chaser game. She had a really traumatic experience years ago when she was studying for her PhD, and her friend Javi has tempted her back into the fold because he has this new technology that could help save lives, but he can't get close enough to a tornado without her help.
Right. Okay. And she's the only person who can help him?
Sorry, just choking on the wine.
Yeah.
The reason is because she has
in a
this
good way. We want to point out, not in like
I like
jaws
it, but I'm
of
still
death way
it.
Or anything. Yeah.
I'm just still sipping away.
Yeah.
But she has like this innate skill of being able to spot just by like looking at the conditions and looking at the clouds and looking at like the wheat. The wheat comes into it quite a bit, and she can be like, okay, don't follow that cloud, follow this cloud instead. And I love how I'm pointing on radio as if other people can see me do that.
Yeah, they get the gist, yeah.
So that's why he needs her help, because then at least if it starts moving or the conditions start changing, then they know where to position themselves in order to get the measurements that they need in order to get this 3D model of what a tornado actually looks like.
Okay, and this kind of, this power she has, is it kind of supernatural or just like...
I, actually not supernatural. They said that she's just always been like that, even as a child.
Okay.
And that's
all right.
Pretty
that's
much
interesting.
It. Yeah.
And so then the relationship between the two of them, is that that quasi-romantic relationship?
Oh, so with Glenn Powell, it's kind of like hate turns to, you know, somewhat romantic interest, as it does, because he is a YouTuber and a tornado wrangler, self-professed.
Eyes rolling here.
Yeah.
Sorry, but so I can't see pointing or eyes rolling.
So he kind of goes, you know, crazy.
No, we can hear your eyes rolling.
And he's like, he like drives like straight into these tornadoes. And to me, I'm just like, it makes no sense. So this is where it kind of was losing me, in the sense of the inconsistency of how powerful does a tornado have to be to pull you into it? Because it's not only just inconsistent with the first film, it's inconsistent within the film itself. So sometimes
these are deadly dangerous. Let's drive straight forward.
Yeah, you could be driving like two roads away and get like blown over. But then, you know, it's passing overhead and you're clinging onto a pole for dear life. And it's, you're just like, oh, OK, I'm fine.
Yeah.
So in that sense, here are a few issues, but overall, you know, it's a film that I like. So, of course, it's going to be crazy and stupid and just mildly entertaining.
Now, at the same time, for, you know, if they show this in Ireland and somebody from Ireland, you know, goes to the United States where these things are common, is this film promoting tornado recklessness in that someone could, well, I saw it on Twisters and it was grand.
Well, do you know what?
And then they end up disemboweled.
It's actually highlighting the kind of craze of Tornado Alley, because there are people who would probably go chasing these storms and not have any kind of common sense as to like what to do in this situation. So while you were saying earlier about how it's like, but people start shouting, run, it's like, well, of course you're going to run, but some people would probably stand there and be like, no, I want to get this video for TikTok. So, know, like, it is actually highlighting a lot of that side of things as well, to be like, please don't do this. Like, there's one moment where there's a market that's about to be hit and people are trying to like take in all of their wares that they were selling. And it's like, no, you've got to leave that. It's here. You've got to run or you're going to die. Like, leave the knickknacks. Like, you're grand.
Does it, and I suppose this is a key thing, does it take itself seriously?
In some ways, but also I think it has enough kind of humour that balances it out. So it's taking itself seriously when it needs to, but then when it doesn't, it's just having a lot of fun. And you can see that everyone's having a lot of fun. Like, I don't know if you saw this recently or if any of the listeners did, but Daisy Edgar-Jones and Anthony Ramos, who plays Javi, they have just recreated the viral Theresa Mannion Storm Desmond moment for social media, and they are both giving it absolute socks, and it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
And is it deliberately based on the...
Oh yeah, it's her talking and they're lip syncing to it.
Oh, brilliant.
So they've done that. Daisy Edgar-Jones has also done a video basically trying to encourage Irish people to go see this, and she's just like, sure, you're all used to crap weather, so if you want to go see a movie based on crap weather, using her Irish accent as well. So it's all these nice little like tricks that they've been doing. So I have to say kudos to the marketing team. They've done an absolutely stellar job, I think, of promoting the film as well. I'm just really annoyed for it that it's coming out just 1 week before the juggernaut that is Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yes, indeed.
So that's going to affect its tally at the box office.
Is Twisters like a very windy version of boring people? I mean, normal people.
No, there's actually there's a bit more plot than normal people.
Yeah.
I was not a fan of normal people. I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
I tried watching it and I was actually just like, I'm so bored.
Did you read the book?
No.
Okay, I think you're going to need to read the book. I don't know, like, it's...
No, you don't need... Well, I mean, that defeats the purpose of a TV show.
Exactly. No, you don't need to read the book, but I think if you do, like, I get the thing of, like, there's not a lot of plot, but, like, if you read the book, you would have kind of... Like, it's about them. It's a character study. It's a study of people and relationships.
If I'm trying to explain, like, a comic book movie to people and saying, oh, you have to read the comic first to understand what's going on, then the movie has failed, essentially.
I thought the TV series was better than the book.
Because
her, and like in all her books, her characters tend to be very cold, intellectual people.
Yeah.
Who you wouldn't really like that much.
Yeah.
You wouldn't give a crap about. Whereas at least in the TV show, there was a lot of will they, won't they, and you've had far more empathy for the directions they went. In the book, you just don't care.
Yeah, hard to root for them.
They're just clever people.
Yeah.
It seems to be a trope of Irish literature. Everybody goes to Trinity nowadays. Nobody goes to DIT in Irish literature at all.
Yeah. Hang on, what's wrong with going to Trinity?
What's wrong with going to Trinity? It's like,
you get all the books.
It's like no other university exists in Ireland. That's all I'm saying. It's the innate snobbery of the Irish literary class.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's another rant I'm going on today. God, I'm full of them. Did people actually cry when they saw, your man in his Wolverine costume.
Yeah.
Ah, for God's sake.
Livy will have more to say on this, I'd say. But so the whole thing is that if you think of the comic books or you think of like the animated X-Men series, which is something that I'd be more familiar with, when you visualize Wolverine, you imagine him in this like yellow and blue suit, but he's actually never, Hugh Jackman's never worn that specific suit in any of the live action.
Oh, I see.
X-Men,
yes.
Any of the, like all Logan, right. He's never worn it. So he is, this isn't a spoiler because it's been pretty much in the news, whatever. And it is also Deadpool and Wolverine. Like we know Wolverine
it's
is going to be
posters,
there, right?
Yeah.
But he wears the suit in this film. And one of the guys involved with the production said that basically like people were crying on set when they saw him in the suit, because it was just such an iconic moment for them to see Hugh Jackman in the specific yellow suit.
Okay.
That it genuinely moved people to tears.
Linda's close to tears right now.
You're
at least she has her face in her hands.
On,
I assume guys. That's what that is. Crikey.
They just said it was Wendy Jacobson who's involved with the film, and just said it was mad to see these adult men like sobbing during the camera test to see him out in the suit like that.
And Hugh Jackman himself was just like, he was like, I deeply regret that we didn't push for this in the original X-Men, because we thought that we just had to be like so cool and like not go like for the bright colours like
they
are in the comics.
All, like, leather and...
Yeah, and then when he saw like the MCU kick off and they were using like kind of like more comic accurate with some twists, costumes and things like that, that he was like, dang, maybe we should... That actually looks really cool. Maybe we should have gone for it. So he was also excited to be in the yellow suit, and then they put sleeves on it reportedly because he was worried about filming outside for his... because he's had a few skin cancer scares. So they put sleeves on it originally. Oh. And then in one of the trailers, they revealed that actually that those sleeves will get ripped off at some point.
Revealing his muscle darts.
Yes.
No doubt.
I'm not so sure exciting. I would have watched any Wolverine movies if he was in a blue and yellow suit. Sorry.
It's very figure-hugging, if that
the
helps.
Bring back the leather.
Yeah, definitely. Hugh.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We all have our preferences. No judgment here. Paul Mescal tore through Daisy's heart like a twister through a trailer park in the Boring People TV show.
He did, yeah.
Says someone, giving their own pre-see of it. Now, Kim Cattrall's going to be in And Just Like That again. Is it going to be just another phone call, or how does this work?
Not confirmed, but all the reports seem to be suggesting that, yeah, she is back for the next season. I think they've thrown a lot of money at her and said, will you please do it? You can do everything on the phone. You do not have to be in the same room as Sarah Jessica Parker. So, yeah, apparently we're going to be seeing her in season 3. She's going to be shooting all her scenes in London. I don't know if it's like a 2-minute scene again, like we saw in the last season, or if it's kind of going to be more extensively throughout the season. But again, apparently, if you're to believe these reports, like Kim and Sarah Jessica Parker still hate each other, but they kind of said, you know, for the sake of the show, we're going to put this aside and keep filming.
Of course.
I think Sarah Jessica Parker said like she can't get over the fact that like Kim just won't come on board, and especially with how much money they are reportedly spending on her to come back. She thinks it's kind of crazy, but...
Could she be doing it? Is she actually trolling her? Because she wants to get to a point, Kim Cattrall does, where she's actually paid more money than Sarah Jessica Parker
like,
for it. And she gets more money for 5 minutes than she gets for the whole
series. And she's
series.
In front of a green screen for 5 minutes pretending to talk to someone on the phone. It's kind of genius, like.
It's brilliant.
We're, like, they're playing checkers, she's playing chess, you know?
Why do they hate each other so much? Or why does Kim hate
just
her so much?
Just a lot of, like, long-standing issues on set, like, about... I think they were kind of friends initially, but Kim has always just said, no, like, it was a workplace thing and I was never as close to the rest of them. And I think it really kind of came to a head when... I think it was Kim's mother died. There was a relative of Kim's died. I think Sarah gave condolences publicly and Kim came back and was like, I don't want your condolences. Like, we're not friends. And it's been very fractious, like, ever since.
That's a bit of an over.
It's really, well, there must be more to it. Like, there's never been like nitty gritty detail. Sarah's just kind of said they've fallen out and it's really sad and has kind of maintained that she would like the friendship to be what it was again. But Kim has always been very staunchly, too much has happened. I've moved past this. I'm grateful for the show and whatever, but like, we're not friends and that's grand.
Okay.
I don't know.
So are we Team Kim or Team Jessica?
I don't know.
I'm trying to remain in the middle here.
I'm trying to remain in the middle, yeah.
Okay.
Well, she's up in Donegal, Sarah Jessica, so I might pop up.
She might be listening. Kim Cattrall, what a bitch. We're halfway through Movies and Booze. Fionnuala, Linda and Olivia are still with us. We've just heard how Kim Cattrall is a total wagon. We've talked about a lovely wine from Greece and how Twisters will be swooping the Oscars this time next year. Let's move on to our second wine, because I had a sip of this already, Linda, and it's quite nice. Thank you very
know,
much.
I know. Pity I wasn't making this. Now, this is from Puglia region in Italy, which is down in the heel of the boot of Italy, a place called Salice Salentino. And this is called Zola. And as you said, Sean, it does have that kind of different shaped bottle. So it is kind of stumpy. I've put on Twitter and Instagram and tagged the show with the bottle and all the rest on the stockists. But it is it's a fun, complex wine. You can get Salice Salentino's in supermarket for 10, 12 quid. This is a bit more of a treat. Of course it is, because it's Friday, movies and booze, you know. And this wine is quite cherry and mulled, mixed mulberry and things like that to stick your nose in. But it's got sweet spice as well. And that's from the oak that's used. So they use French and American oak barrels to age the wine for up to 10 months. So it just kind of softens the tannin. So it's really smooth and velvety and silky. So I love this, again, barbecue, your hot dogs, your burgers, your cheese boards with charcuterie and all that, and pizza with, like, you know, your gorgeous salamis and sausages and all that. I love this wine. So really smooth, real intense, but like it's medium to full bodied. It's not like, it's only 13% alcohol, I think. Yeah, 13%.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah, but
that's
it tastes
good. You
much
can taste
more
the
intense.
Heat off it, though. I suppose the heat of the booze of Italy.
Exactly. So it's quite ripe fruit. And so the grapes here are, it's not named on the bottle whatsoever what the grapes are. Salice Salentino is the town, and the grapes are Negro Amaro and Nero Malvasia. So they're just local to the area, really. But it's so silky and smooth, and it's a great gift to give to people as well. So costing you about €22 again, 64 wines, Black Rock Cellar, McHugh's, Searson's, Sweeney's D3, and Wine Online as well.
Is that unusual that a bottle won't mention the grapes?
No. No, there's loads of wines that it's literally, if you don't know the area, who are you? I mean, you know, like Burgundy, Bordeaux, none of them say what the grapes are. You're supposed to have that knowledge. Whereas that's usually with old world countries, France, Italy, Spain, Portugal. They don't really tell you on the front what the grapes are. It's usually the region. So Rioja, you don't know that's the Tempranillo, you know. So it might say on the back label, but the New World, Chile, Australia, New Zealand and California and USA, they'll boldly say Chardonnay, Shiraz.
Yeah.
So that's the difference, I suppose, between the old world and the new world, that they, you need to have a little bit of knowledge about, you know, the European wines to kind of see what's behind the label.
I suppose there may be a thing that, like, as is the case there, if you've never heard the wines, then you don't know.
Yeah.
You'll probably be more familiar with the area then.
Yeah, loads of people go on holidays to Puglia and they say it's absolutely stunning. But when they come back, they are like searching these wines, but they've still no idea of the grapes, but they look for Puglia wines or Salice Salentino without knowing, but they know they like the grapes. You don't need to know the grapes.
Yeah.
Just go for the region.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How come wine people never recommend a wine to go with a ham sandwich? The wine critics are elitist. Time to bring back wine to the common man. Also, your movie buff last week was wrong. Despicable Me 4 is class.
Ooh.
This is a texter. Or wasn't you.
It wasn't me.
No, but yeah.
Well, that listener, like, I mean, I love fried chicken with champagne. I mean, what's not every day about that?
Absolutely.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
And ham sandwiches, go for a Pinot Grigio, something simple like that. You don't need to be, I mean, whatever you like. Do whatever you want, you know.
Kim Cattrall went from being a legend to looking like an idiot. She kept saying, I'll never go back then. I'll go back for one scene to celebrate 20 years. Now it's, oh, I'll come back for season 3. Make up your mind and stop bashing the women who helped make your career.
Ooh. I mean, I will say, like, in later years, she has been very, like, it's not that she's going on a rant about Sarah Jessica Parker all the time, but she is just very, like, I wish people would stop projecting this idea that they have of the, because obviously the core of Sex and the City is that it's these four friends, and I get it, like, you buy into it, but she's just kind of like, can we stop doing that? And I've moved beyond the show, and like, I want to do other things, and like, that's it. It's not that she's constantly slagging off Sarah Jessica Parker, but also, like, money talks, you know what I mean? As I said, if these reports are true, she's going to be getting paid a lot of money to do respectfully very little work in comparison to the rest of the women. So I think she's kind of playing the longer game there, you know what I mean? It's I get it.
Yeah, lots of people can't do things for money.
Exactly.
Worse things.
Exactly. And if that texter was offered, probably again in the millions to do, I don't know, 3-4 days work maybe. Because again, we don't know her capacity in this season.
Yeah.
It could be a 2-minute cameo again or something much more substantial. Who knows?
Yeah. If you were offered millions, yes, Dexter, if you were offered millions to go back to that job in Centra that you hated in 1993, would you do it? Of course you would. Hello, less about your highbrow art house movies and tell me, when is the next Sharknado movie coming out? Tom and Galway wants to know. Have they finished that franchise?
I haven't finished the franchise.
The franchise was finished, but we're still waiting for Tommy Wiseau's from The Room. We're still waiting for his shark movie to come out. So I'm hoping that that'll come out at some point. It was teased. Gosh, I think it was like 2018, 2019. He had like a little teaser trailer for it. So I'm waiting for that to come out. That's going to be my new B-movie shark movie.
And is there any, was there any hint given as to what kind of a shark movie it is? Is it like interesting conversations with a shark, or are sharks actually eating people?
Shark is eating people.
Okay, good to know.
I think it's called Big Shark. If memory serves me right.
On the show a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah. Big Shark.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a name.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you see, they pay these script writers, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting fact, the reason Wolverine's costume is bright yellow as opposed to the rest of the X-Men's blue with yellow accent is because he stands out as a target for the bad guys protecting the other X-Men due to his healing factor.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's actually
there you go.
Kind of fun.
Yep. I don't know, he lost me halfway through that, whatever that was about.
That made perfect sense to me.
So the Madonna biopic is happening again.
Yes, I feel like every few weeks I come back and I'm like, it's happening. And then I come back a few weeks later and I say, it's not happening. But apparently it's back on. So in January 2023, it was set for Universal Pictures, but then plans fell through. Madonna has put up a new photo on social media in which she's kind of sitting in front of a script that has a potential title of Who's That Girl? A nod to her own song.
Okay.
And you can see on the script it says rewrites by Madonna and ECW. ECW refers to Aaron Cresta Wilson, who wrote Secretary. Aaron was brought on after Diablo Cody exited the project. So we could be getting this maybe sooner than we thought. I think the last time we'd spoken, I talked about the Madonna boot camp as well that a lot of the actors had gone through to get the role, like 11-hour choreography days and stuff like that. The last we'd heard from that was that Julia Garner, who people know from Ozark and Inventing Anna, she has it. But that's again, that might have changed again since. So if I hear anything else, I'll probably be back next week to tell you. But yeah.
Let's go on to our second movie of the day. It is My Spy, The Eternal City. Here's a clip.
Come on, another set. It's the only time we get to hang out.
No, I can't, okay? I just got too much homework.
If you want to be a great agent, you got to put in the time.
Yeah, well, I have other interests now that also require my time.
I used to really want to be an agent. It's all you ever talked about.
Yeah, well, I also wanted to be Dora the Explorer. I've changed. Okay, and so have you. I mean, being in the field is all you used to talk about, and now you prefer making pasta and scones.
Well, I think it's just another excuse to skip practice and take the easy road. I mean, you're not hitting your high kicks, your punching speed is slow, and I haven't seen you pick up a knife in like 3 weeks.
There you go. Actually, I preferred that clip to the Twisters one. That's My Spy, The Eternal City. Do we need to have seen the first film to appreciate all the complex plot points?
Do you know what? I hadn't seen the first one before seeing this one and I was okay. There was a few moments where I was a bit like, I don't really get this reference. But it is actually kind of explained later on in the film, so it's not too bad. As I said, the first film that JJ was hired to kind of like spy on this woman and her child, he is now dating said woman and her child. Sophie is now his protege and stepdaughter.
And he's kind of loco parentis kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's like training her in espionage still. But now she's kind of like at that age where she wants to go and hang out with boys and ends up going on this trip to Italy, which he tags along as a chaperone for. And So she's supposed to be about, I think it's 14, and the actress Chloe is 16.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, when they choose the ages for these things, you're kind of, you know, are they skirting around what's appropriate and what's a bit, you know. I know Dave Bautista is like a kind of parental figure in this. Yeah,
yeah, and it's kind of, but like with her interest with the boys and things like that, it's actually still very age appropriate. I thought it was actually kind of sweet and cute, and she was all like nervous trying to ask out this boy to prom and things like that. So like,
yeah,
it is still like age appropriate, but it is also kind of like he is not dealing with this fact well. Like I said, he's always been so used to the two of them hanging out all the time, whereas now she's trying to kind of like find her own way. But realizing that actually, no, she does actually still need JJ's help in a lot of ways, especially when her best mate gets kidnapped when they're in Italy.
Of course she does. Now, but she is also a trained killer, though. A 14-year-old trained killer.
Yeah, to a certain extent. Yes. Like that knife shot that we just heard about there. Yeah, her accuracy is scary. Mm. And then you kind of see like certain bits of like the training. And of course, like it's not the actress, Chloe, who's doing these tricks herself. It's clearly like a stunt double. But like there are certain things that she did have to do. So for a 16-year-old to be able to do some of the fight choreo that she was trained in and like, taught is actually really impressive. Like she is in some cases on par with what Dave Bautista is doing. Actually, maybe even more complex because he's supposed to be a bit out of whack from taking a desk job and not being out in the field anymore.
Right,
so it's quite interesting in that sense to kind of see the tables turning slightly.
Why is he giving her all this training anyway? Why is he teaching her accurate with a knife?
So with the first installment, she wanted to learn all about spy and like be trained to do this as a career down the line. Whereas now she's kind of thinking maybe that's not what she wants to do, but because
she wants to be an influencer. They all do. It's just what happens.
But she's kind of like not really changing her mind, but also she wants to just explore everything else that life has to offer, which is understandable at 14.
Okay, fine. Yeah. So they go to Italy, Frank gets kidnapped, and then it's action stations.
It is. Yeah. And actually, that's kind of for me where the story really kind of picked up. It was a little bit slow pacing at first. And because I hadn't seen the first one, I was a bit unsure as to what was really going on. Also, Anna Faris is in it as the vice principal, and I did not recognize her. Whatever wig they put on her, she just was unrecognizable, and I didn't twig it until later on in the film that it was even her. But once it actually kind of picks up with a bit more of the action, a bit more of the kind of the chase and to figure out who's behind this and what's going on and save the world kind of thing, that's when the story kind of picked up for me. So it's definitely more of a family friendly kind of thing as opposed to the big action blockbuster that Twisters is. But if you're just looking to like pop something on Prime Video this weekend, then you could do worse than My Spy.
Okay, it's kind of Spy Kids territory then, I suppose.
A bit, but with Dave Bautista, which kind of makes everything better.
Yeah, fair enough. Someone says there may not be a new Sharknado movie, but there is a spin-off called Catnado. And yes, it's the same thing, but with cats. Please say that's true.
I have no idea if it's true.
Please say that's true.
I need to see it. And if it's not true, someone please make it.
Oh, do you know? I bet you DC Douglas or someone like that would know because he's been in a lot of those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More eye rolling here.
Yeah, no eye rolling. Sorry, yeah. Linda's face has been in her hands half the conversations we've been having.
Linda's reaching for the wine bottle.
Yeah. I'll take Catnado over another sequel, like, you know?
Yeah. Well, at least there's there's some originality in it. Of course not a bit of originality in it. You don't like things like that, Linda, no?
No, they're just silly, like.
Yeah,
no.
That's true.
That's the point. Like, you go in knowing that they're silly.
No. Sharknado is so good.
No, but
bad it's good.
Yeah. Do you like the Marvel movies and all that stuff?
I would watch them, but I wouldn't turn one on.
So yes.
If it was on the TV, I'd watch it. I probably have watched more starts, middle or end of all of these Marvel movies than watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you know, and I like Guardians of the Galaxy. I like them. But no, I'd never turn them on. Like,
yeah. I love how you looked to me for reassurance that you were saying that title,
that the right?
Yeah.
And the little creature fellow. Yeah. Who's that? No, not him. The little raccoon.
Well, they're all
fella.
Little creatures, isn't that? The little furry fella. Him. I'm not harassed, that fella. Yeah.
I love him.
So what's the last movie you watched from start to finish?
Ooh, I can't remember.
Oh, gosh.
Hidden Figures. I know it's really old, but the NASA women, that was great.
Yeah. That's a good film,
That is a good film.
And Good Morning Vietnam.
Okay.
I've never seen it.
Like, that's what I meant. It's not like the last time I watched a film was in 1976. Right, okay. The Doom TV series has got a release date. Linda's waiting and with bated breath.
She cannot
to find
wait.
Out when this starts.
She cannot
starting.
Wait to see the origin story of
is
the
these people wearing masks walking around the desert, not making much sense to each other.
Sandworms. And Linda's like, yes.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, it's coming in November. This is Dune Prophecy. It's at 10,000 years before the events of the recent films. It's based on Sisterhood of Dune, which is a novel by Brian Herbert, who's the son of the original Dune author.
Yes,
if you're into this, you're into this.
Yeah.
If you're not, you're not.
When they say events, they mean loosely.
Yeah.
There's not that much.
Who do we have in it? We have Emily Watson and Olivia Williams, Travis Fimmel, Jodie May, Mark Strong. Yeah. If you're into it, you're into it. If you're not, you're not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they doing a panel at San Diego Comic-Con next week? I wonder.
They could be. Seems likely. Seems like something that
should be done. She said knowledgeably. And Andrew Scott is going to be in a war thriller.
Yes, and speaking of the Emmys, he's nominated indeed. For Ripley, which I did not think was that good, but I'm happy for him.
Yeah, yes.
Not a critique of him, just very cold series. But anyway, he is nominated. Good for him. Hope he wins. Yeah, he is going to be in a war thriller set during the Battle of Normandy. I heard that and I was kind of like boring, snoring. But he's actually, so the film's called Pressure. And the synopsis is, in the 72 hours leading up to D-Day, all the pieces are in place except for one key element, the British weather. Britain's chief meteorological guy. James Stagg, played by Andrew Scott, is called upon to deliver the most consequential forecast in history, locking him into a tense standoff with the entire Allied leadership.
Okay, it sounds a bit like Twisters there, doesn't it?
Yeah. It all comes back to weather, folks.
Towards the end of that. And Bob Newhart died at age 94. And it's funny, kind of, because he was so old. He wasn't the Big Bang Theory. But like, depending on your age.
What an Emmy for it, which I didn't, because obviously I was into Big Bang Theory at the start and then dropped off.
But you'd remember the Bob Newhart show.
He's Elf. Like, just very sad.
And one of my favourite quotes of his is, I don't like country music, but I don't mean to denigrate those who do. And for those people who like country music, denigrate means to put down. Fionnuala, Linda and Olivia, thank you all very much for coming in today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.